So, we have a new speaker here. It's Thijs Boschert. I guess quite a few of you know him. It seems to me like a lot of you are here for him, especially. So, he's a very experienced forensic analyst and also penetration tester. So you would think, you know, on a hacker conference, he would be talking about that. But no, he will talk about something else entirely. He will talk about the art of creating an escape room. So maybe there's some similarity to, you know, hacking and stuff. Maybe not, we'll see. I'm excited to hear what he has to say. So please give a warm, welcoming applause to him now. Thank you.
Thank you. I must say I'm quite overwhelmed with the amount of people in the room. I've been walking past quite some talks, and I was really afraid it would be quite empty here. So thank you for coming, and I hope I can entertain you a bit for the next hour. I can talk about escape rooms for hours on end, so I'll try to squeeze it in an hour, and else just kick me off the stage. And my presenter just stopped working. It's technology. I can only go backwards. It's going to be a very short presentation, no. So I'll quickly introduce myself for the people who don't know me. I'm Thijs Boschert. I'm a security professional. I freelance at the moment. I've been active in the security industry for around 15 years and be hobbying for around 20 years. I've done a lot of different security things, but I'm not here for the security part. I'm more for one of my hobbies, which turned into a profession as well. And that's the escape room design. Besides that, I'm also a CTF player, which I do together with a couple of teams, one of them being the Eindbazen, which gladly enough are sitting here. Thank you, guys. So with the Eindbazen team, we are actually next door on this field in this CTF tent, and we organized the CTF during SHA 2017. So people have been battling against each other to solve all kinds of challenges, trying to get the first spot. And we have a lounge where they can play in. We have some tables they can play on. And I submitted a proposal for a talk about CTFs. But that got rejected. So sadly enough, I had to skip that, so I cannot talk about the CTF and the statistics that we had more than 1,000 teams joining us, that we had 462 teams who actually were involved, we had 114 teams playing from on-site on SHA, and the team that won was Eat, Sleep, Pwn, Repeat, which were on-site, and they have been number one from the start. They did a pretty great job. We did a junior CTF as well, which had a lot of low-level challenges, so people could get introduced with CTFing and enjoy it while not be scared about the way too hard challenges in a normal CTF. A lot of people play that as well, and we really enjoyed hosting it. It's still open till the end of SHA. So if you're interested, we're next door. But I had another talk. Well, talking about SHA online, one of the Eindbazen team members asked me, why don't you give a talk about escape rooms? Because he thought it would be awesome. And I thought about it and I was like, why not? So I submitted it and that talk got accepted. So the first question is, what is an escape room? Well, you can read it yourself. And thank you, Google. So an escape room is a room where you go in and solve puzzles. An escape room is not a panic room. Quite often, when I'm talking about escape rooms, people have an idea I build panic rooms. So if you order an escape room for me, and you accept a panic room, you might be in for a treat when you run inside your panic room and you first have to solve puzzles for 1 hour before you can get out. So what will I be talking about? So I built a couple of escape rooms. I created two, which are currently being deployed, but I designed and partly created four. And I will be talking about the designing the building, some technology behind it, the designing of the puzzle flows, and a lot of things that went wrong. Why did I want to build an escape room? It all started somewhere around 2014. Together with the Eindbaas, a part of the Eindbaas team, we decided to play an escape room. And basically, after playing the first escape room, it got me hooked. For me, it was some kind of real-life hacking, and I really like to solve puzzles. We managed to actually escape from the room, so it gave me a nice feeling about escape rooms. And some statistics, at that time in the Netherlands, there were around 48 rooms in 28 locations. So it was already growing in the Netherlands. And where are the rooms in the Netherlands? Everywhere. Giving a big forward to March 2015, I took a sabbatical. I was still working in security, as I am now. But I took a sabbatical for 6 months, and 4 months in, I decided to quit my job, take the 2 months' notice, went on a trip to Australia, went on to New Zealand, and I had a lot of walks, and I sat on a lot of mountains. I was carrying a small notebook, and during all the walking I did, and the sitting on top of mountains, I thought about my future, I thought about my career, I thought about, what do I want to do in my life? So I came back, and I still didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. But in that small booklet, I scribbled a lot of different things. And one of those things were all kind of puzzles I came up with. And I made some flows of puzzles, I find some teams, I wrote some scenarios. And I was like, yeah, I still think escape rooms are awesome, and I want to build one. Then I came back. I started as a freelancer doing security stuff, and that idea was still there, but I didn't do anything with it. At that time, there were 117 rooms in the Netherlands on 73 locations. So they were on the rise. Then, a month later, I saw a local newspaper which had an item about one of the local companies claiming they would open an escape room in a couple of months. And then I thought, shit. I wanted to do that. So I thought about it, and I decided, why not contact them? So I contacted them, asked them about the escape rooms, and they told me, we basically said that so nobody else would build one, but we have no idea how to build it, we have no one to do it. So that worked out pretty well. I showed up with a lot of notes, a lot of designs I made in the meantime, and they initially thought I was a professional escape room builder. So they hired me, and I created my first escape room. We joined in a partnership, so I would partly be owner of the whole system, and they would take a license. Now, I actually had to create an escape room. And it actually had to be built instead of scribbling something on paper. And I found out building an escape room is hard. There's an insane amount of things you need to take into account. Or you just can disregard all that, throw 500 euros at it, buy a couple of locks, make a shitty experience, nobody's going to play again. And that's what a lot of companies do. So how did I go on about to build escape room? First part was choose a team. And that's quite hard, because we already saw there were quite some rooms in the Netherlands back then. And of course, every room has a team. And you have to find a team that inspires you, but that doesn't already have 20 rooms in the Netherlands with the same team. Because then people simply won't play your room, even if it's awesome. Can you think of something unique? Well, with the amount of rooms in the Netherlands, in the end, no. But you might give it a twist. The next part with coming up with a team is building mood boards. So you just Google a lot, and you just throw a lot of stuff on a page, small parts, large parts, get an idea about colors, about items, about what you might want to put in a room. Some things that might be way too far-fetched, but look really cool. And with creating a couple of mood boards, you get a better idea about a team. And after you find your team, you choose a team, and then the next part comes. Write a scenario. You don't have to do this, but it helps a lot. So after you find your team, you write some kind of scenario, how you think the room should be built, how the puzzles should be influenced, how the whole story unfolds during that hour you're in that room. You want to entertain the people for an hour long. I wrote a lot of different things and then changed it and changed it and changed it. And during the rest of the building of the room, I completely changed it again. But it gives you an ID where you want to go. After that, I started with some physical location concepts to have an ID how big a room needs to be, how you will connect everything, what kind of size you need. Another thing is location. For me, it's already fixed because I partnered up with a different company. But I saw escape rooms are basically in three different kind of locations. In the middle of nowhere, in a city, or part of something bigger. And part of something bigger, I mean a location where you can play laser tag, or where you can play, where you can go-karting, or that kind of things. It might have a bar. So there's quite a bit of difference between these three locations. Because if you're playing an escape room, it's the same when you play an escape room. If you choose a location to play one, you probably do not want to choose the one in the middle of nowhere. Because you finish your escape room, you had an awesome time, and then you get kicked out because the next team comes along, and you're standing in a parking lot. And I had that a couple of times, and it's quite an anticlimax of your experience. So, in a city, you could just walk next door to the next pub, enjoy a couple of beers, and talk about your experience. Or being part of a bigger complex, if they have a bar inside, you go there, you talk with your friends, and you still have a great time. I will come back to why I explained this part. And I'm now going back to my physical location. I started making some building plans. So I knew what kind of size I had to work with. So I decided how many rooms I would use and the whole layout. At this time, I joined up with a partner, which joined me in building the escape rooms. And he took over part of the job. So we built it together. Then we changed it all around till we got some nice floor plans of what we wanted to build. Because we only played a couple of rooms, and we never played a room together, we decided to play a room together somewhere else to see what our thinking process would be. So I was there together with a partner who joined me, and we decided to play a couple of rooms. During that, we actually found out, we thought completely different about escape rooms and what you had to do about it. So it's really useful. This was August 2015. Around that time, there were 192 rooms in the Netherlands in 113 locations. They got more and more popular. So I already was wondering, does it actually make sense to keep building these rooms? But we kept going because we wanted to build those rooms. We went on and we made some digital designs of the rooms we wanted to build. We placed some objects in there, played around with the space, what would fit, how do we want to build it, and we decided on the two teams and what we wanted to do with it, and the scenarios we wanted to do. We started designing the control room, because an escape room is basically where you are playing, and the guys who are watching you need to be somewhere as well, which I will touch on a bit later as well. Next part is, now we have a digital ID of what we want, now we have to find the items. And we have to put a lot of stuff in that room, and we want to make it all look natural. That means I've been visiting thrift shops for years, and I've been a couple of times a week, so they basically know me when I walk inside. And you just look around, and every now and then it's like, yes, this is my item. You take it with you, you store it somewhere, and the next day you do basically do the same. And you really want to have stuff that fits together, because you want to have a nice immersion for the people playing the room. The immersion is part of the real experience. And one of the things I really don't like if I'm in an escape room, and it has all kinds of IKEA furniture and claims to be from the 80s. That way, you're not really in the story. Sometimes you have some big stuff in the room, or it may be the location you use has something like this. So how do you hide that? You might build something around it. One of the things we had to do is finding a way to hide the subwoofers in the room, which I will show on one of the other pictures later on, what we did with that. Also, the natural part, if you have a cupboard, and if you want to lock that, you probably want to use the real lock inside of it. Around 50% of the escape rooms just put a padlock on that, and it feels really artificial. It works, but it's simply not the natural look you want. Sorry. Yeah, there we go. Once again, we decided to play an escape room while designing everything, while building everything. And we still finished the room. And this was in December 2015. At that time, there were 260 rooms in the Netherlands on 151 locations. And every time I looked at the stats, I was like, yeah, I'm not sure this is actually a great idea to keep doing this. But we were already quite far away, so far along the way, so we just continued. And in the meantime, we were designing the puzzles. There are a lot of different kind of puzzles you can use in the escape room. The whole idea is 60 minutes of solving different puzzles till you get out of the room. So you do not want to have 60 minutes of finding a key, using it in a lock, finding a new key, using it in a lock, finding a new key, using it in a lock, and then probably find a new key and use it in a lock. There are rooms out there who exactly do that. And they are completely linear. And afterwards, you probably have an idea. I had no idea what we have done, but I tried keys on all kinds of locks, and in the end, we solved it. So you want to have different kinds of puzzles. It doesn't matter if you every now and then find a key and try it in a lock. You have some combination locks. It doesn't mean that if you throw 20 combination locks after each other that you have a better room. You also want to have some other kind of puzzle. You want to have people think about puzzles. You might want to have them something to do. They might have to join forces together to be able to solve something. From my experience, I could tell you, you do not want to use too much technology. It's really awesome to throw a lot of technology in your puzzles. Technology breaks. And it's pretty hard when the technology breaks, which we'll see some examples later on, to cover for that. You cannot say to the next group, yeah, sorry, the whole room is gone because one of the puzzles broke. And the last part is logic. I've played quite a bit of rooms, and afterwards I was like, I had no idea why I had to place this here, and then that door opened. There was nothing explaining that, but I had to do it, it worked, but please make sure there is some logic in there. And then going on, building the puzzles, you create a concept, you create a prototype, you test your prototype, you go back, you adjust, and then you discard. I created quite some puzzles, and in the end, I was like, yeah, this is not going to work. Some puzzles are not feasible, and some puzzles might make sense in your own head and not in anyone else. And that's hard to do, to discard stuff, especially if you use a lot of time to create it. After that, you create a first version, you have a test run, so you throw the puzzle at someone else, let them try it. If they like it, you might say, okay, we're going to use this one. Then you have to create a version which actually works in real time and stays working more than two times. I spent a lot of time at home placing stuff on sensors, so for hours and on, just making sure that it works. And if it doesn't work, you have to adjust the sensors, buy new sensors. I made some puzzles with magnets, and I found out it's really hard to get a strong reading with a magnet to make sure every time the sensor get triggered. If I put this here, it needs to be triggered. If I put it here, it doesn't need to be triggered. It should not trigger. But if I use it here slightly to the left, and it doesn't work anymore, it makes it really hard to get a stable room. So if people are playing in a room, and they have to put this thing here, and it needs to trigger somewhere or something, it's really bad if you have to tell them after the moment, please move it a little bit to the left. Then it might trigger the sensor. A little bit more to the right. Yeah, that should do it. That took me a lot of time building that kind of stuff. And that brings me back to the thing I said before, don't use too much technology. Making it robust is quite hard, which we will see some examples of. You will have a lot of wear and tear, and you have to replace your stuff. Once you build the escape room, you have to build basically the whole room again after a year. If you want to work with locks, there are quite a bit of different kind of locks. The normal one, the pin tumblers, the wafers, padlocks, that kind of things. Combination locks, electronic locks with Bluetooth, RFID, magnetic stuff. You can use a lot of microcontrollers, Arduinos, Raspberry Pis. You might use some Bluetooth stuff. Doesn't really matter what you have. It's nice to have a nice combination of these kind of things. With the microcontrollers, one of the things we had a lot of issues with, if you buy cheap knockoff Arduinos, they might want to reset them every hour because they get pretty unstable. Some of the concepts we used, we would design stuff digitally first, and then you can do whatever you want and have the wildest ideas. And then you have to build it, and you have to make sure that it actually can be built within your budget. So this one actually turned out to be that one, and it's before it's painted. And during the building of this, I figured something out. My partner and I did not agree on the way you should create a network cable. And we were using power over Ethernet. So basically, he was using the A version, I was using the B version, and we threw power over Ethernet on it, and while measuring some of the cables, I blew a couple of cable testers. Actually, there's still, in one of the rooms I've built, there's still some cabling inside of that, which you first have to look at the cable before you do anything with it, because it was really hard to fix it all after building it. So make sure you communicate and make standards together if you're working together. Some other examples of puzzle designs. This is a chess piece, a chessboard, which would have some kind of electronica behind it. And this is one of the things where the sensors really come into account, because it only needs to work when this chess piece is on this spot. And you want to make sure that if it's 2 millimeters to the right, it's still okay. But if it's halfway one of the others, you shouldn't. And it took way more time than it should. And I built it in some old chess board, so it looked natural, which made it way harder to build. I was pretty happy with it in the end, and then it broke. And it brings me to the puzzle failures. Sometimes you need to accept defeat. Not everything works. Some puzzles are not feasible. I had some wild ideas building a own microcontroller in an old Nokia phone and make it look like a normal phone where you could check a text message. And I built it all, and then I dropped it, and it was completely gone. And you will know anyone in your room will drop that within a week. So I could not get it stable enough, and I had to drop the whole idea. Like I said, sometimes it just breaks during the creation. So you have a lot of puzzles. Then it brings me to the next part, the puzzle flow. Like I said, some of the rooms are finding a key, using a lock, finding a key, using a lock. And that's a linear approach. And even if it's not a key can be something, it can be a word, can be placed this on this location, anything like that, but still you don't want to have a room where it is puzzle, key, because it means only one person is actually playing in the room. And if you are going into the room with eight people, that means eight people are walking around each other through the room. And then you have seven people who are bored and one person who has a great time. So you want to have something partly linear, partly parallel. You cannot have it completely parallel. I played one room which was like eight parallel puzzles, which would all give one number, and that was the end, which didn't make sense at all. So this is what we kept in mind while building this, and this is one of the flows of one of the rooms. And even building this for myself took quite a while. And then you're adjusting it, but you make sure multiple people are in the room, enjoying themselves, solving some of the puzzles. It comes back together, goes on to the next part of the room, and this is 1 hour of entertainment. And if you're really good, you might be able to solve it in 45 minutes. This is one of the flows of one of the other rooms, which is quite a bit different, but there's a lot of parallel work, a lot of parallel things to make sure everybody enjoys their time. Having the puzzles, having the puzzle flows, brings me partly to the rest of the room. You need some furniture in there. And then it's going back to the thrift shop, looking around, and sometimes you find something in the thrift shop which haunts you. So I walked past this display through the thrift shop, and it was in my mind, and I kept walking around like, those are disturbing. There's a couple of paintings. Why would anybody make that? So I bought them and I put them in the room. So everybody, I actually bought two more in the end. So from all sides in one of the rooms, these children are looking at you. That gives you a great funny feeling while you're playing the room. Sometimes you really think you find the right item and then you find an even better one the next week. I wanted to have an old phone, and I really loved it when I finally found it, and then I found a red one. And this was for a bunker team, an old military bunker, and I really liked to have the red phone. And we already built the one on the left, so we had to discard that and use the red one. Besides all the puzzles, there are a lot of other technology in a room, part of it being the light. With a light, you can really control the immersion of the players. You can make it dark, of course, you can influence the moods. In the end, we used a lot of LED lighting, so LED spots, LED strips, or LED panels, which we wanted to make sure to be able to trigger them. So we wanted to control the light anytime we wanted, in any color we wanted. And we wanted to do it manually as well as automatically. So I bought a lot of light panels and a lot of hardware from China, and I spent quite some days trying to get everything working. This is all controlled over DMX, and people who have worked with DMX before, actually, we have had some people in the room next to this tent who wasted a day on trying to get DMX working. It's quite a pain. In the end, we could control every panel in any color we want, and then this panels we used in the ceiling. And we built some frames around it, and they look like ceiling windows. They were pretty good. I was really happy with that, and it actually fooled me. I installed them myself, and while I was building the rest of the room, we had them on a kind of light. It really felt like it was light outside. And then at 12 at night, I walked outside, it's completely pitch dark. And it completely screwed up my biorhythm. And that way, by working it into the room this way, you can really control the immersion of the players. Some other technology we used, the cameras. You want to make sure you can see every spot in the room. And you want to do that in an affordable way. Cameras can be really expensive. And we decided to go with Foscam cameras and some other software. And also this was quite a lot of work to set up. In the end, with the lighting, with all the puzzles, with the networking, with the cameras, we ended up with a lot of cables coming into one location, which we did not label at that moment. That was one of the things we found out was not very, not a very good idea. And these are actually cables from two different rooms, and they're not even sorted per room. So we definitely could improve here. After we in this picture, we started with labeling all the different wires. So these are lightning. This is part of all the puzzles being connected over power over Ethernet. These are sound, because we had sound on every part in the room. The paintings I just showed you, we put those in front of the audio outputs. So you couldn't see them, and they would not block the sound. So you had no idea where the sound would come from. And we could actually let the paintings talk to you, which make them even more haunting. So all the cables, you throw them all together and connect them to all the stuff we had. We made some custom power over Ethernet injectors, which we could remotely switch with a USB relay system. And also with that one, we run a lot of problems. If you buy a cheap USB relay from China, then you're completely on your own of how to actually switch something with that. And we found out if you reboot a machine and the USB is connected to that, then it basically, during bootings, tries to reset all the relays 20 times. And that's great for your Arduinos to do that. One of the other things we build in, which if you want to have a nice experience, you actually want to have some kind of hint system. And we wanted to have a hint system which really fitted the room. So we built a mirror. If you look at the mirror, you see yourself. But if we actually send something to it, you get text in the mirror. There's some technology behind it. So basically, it's an old monitor. There's a Raspberry Pi in there. Everything worked together in one frame. And in the end, it looked pretty natural how we built it. The frame is from some old painting I bought at a thrift store. Threw away the painting, used the frame. And this way, we can communicate with the players in the room. In one of the other rooms, we used a small printer, which you normally get a receipt from. And we build that in a old device. And this is now a Telex machine, which sends you Telex messages as a hint system. And that way, you're still immersed in the whole room. What I don't like, what quite a lot of rooms do, as soon as you get a hint, somebody is using some kind of way to talk over the audio system, and it completely gets you out of the game. Or somebody walks inside of the room to tell you. But that's why we really want to have some kind of hint system. Back to that digital design. This was the digital design we came up with, and this is the actual room. And when I first walked inside my own room, which I designed, I really felt like I'm not in that complex anymore. I'm actually standing inside a wood cabin. And it really felt natural, so I was really happy how it worked out. And at that time, it became time to have people test the room, because I built something together with a partner, and it made sense to us. So how much sense would it make to others? And I was really happy. The first players ever in my room were my brother and my parents. And they sadly did not make the room. They did not manage to escape, partly because there were some stuff that simply didn't work. But they still enjoyed doing this. And after that, I started making adjustments to make sure it would be ready for the next test persons. And of course, I enjoyed a beer while watching them playing the room. At that time, there were 274 rooms in the Netherlands on 156 locations. And once again, I was like, I'm not sure this will keep up this way. After I designed the room and built it, in the beginning I would be the game master of the games, it was time to hand that over to the employees of the complex I built it together with. And those game masters, they can make or break your experience. And they will be in a control room. Sometimes the control room is one screen in a hallway. But if they have a decent control room, they'll be sitting there for a lot of monitors watching you play the game. They can make and break your experience. Which brings me to a story of those guys and me playing one of the escape rooms in Atlanta. So we're playing that room. It goes pretty well. And after a while, we get stuck. There's something inside a cupboard, and we cannot get it out. And we tried to find anything in the room to do that. There was a small hole in the top. In the end, we almost tried to push everything we could find through the hole in the room. And still, no way to solve that. So then the time ran out. The game master comes in, and we were like, yeah, how does this puzzle work? And she's like, yeah, you had to use those two hooks you had. And we were like, which hooks? Yeah, you probably lost them. No, we're pretty sure we never found those hooks. Yeah, and it should have been in this belt. They were not in this belt. And we were like, we're pretty sure it was never here, so we couldn't have solved the room. So she goes back, she returns, and she tells us, I give you the benefit of the doubt, which did not really work well with us. And she brought the hooks. Like, yeah, these are the kind of hooks. So we were like, yeah, well, just reset the clock 15 minutes, give us the hooks, and we'll continue playing. And that was actually an option, so we finished the game in the next 15 minutes, and we played the room. But that whole experience shows game masters make or break your experience. They have to reset the room. They have to make sure everything is in the room. Every stuff needs to be replaced. And this was a really bad experience. So I wanted to make sure that my employees would know how an escape room works. So I played an escape room together with my employees. This was around April 2016. At that time, 326 rooms in the Netherlands on 181 locations. And that line just keeps going up. I actually played another room with them in August, just to make sure they know how to actually have the best game experience for the players. And in August 2016, 386 rooms, more than 200 locations. And that line just goes on. My employees actually came up with a fun game to make sure they would pay attention to everything that happens in the room. They made escape room bingo. So every time somebody would do something stupid in the room, they would cross something off. Every time someone would mispronounce something in the room, we had one of the challenges is, it was some kind of riddle, which said something about, I have to translate it in my head. It doesn't really make sense in English. I'm sorry, it doesn't work that way. But every time somebody would, and sometimes people read a sign and they just read it wrong. And then the whole group is trying to find the wrong solution. And that was one of those as well. If somebody would have find something in the room, you don't need for anything, but they kept walking with it for 15 minutes because they were pretty sure it had something to do with the game. Well, all those kind of things, and I was pretty happy with them doing this because it would make sure they would pay attention. I had some of the employees who were playing with their phone all the time, and then something happened. One of the players in the room, he pulled something open, which was locked with a magnet, with an electronic magnet, and you need quite some power to do that. And the guy told me, yeah, you really need to fix that because they just touched it lightly and it jumped open. So I watched the cameras back, and I actually see someone in the room walking to that, feeling, there might be something here. Then she walks over to someone else and tells the guy, yeah, I think that can be opened, but we're not allowed to use any force because the employee told us we don't need any force. And the guy said, I will be the judge of that. And he just walked over there, and he was like, but in the mind of the employee, it was because it was not built well enough, because he probably was on his phone. So Game Masters make or breaker experience, and that's one of the weak things in escape rooms. Even the room can be really awesome, but if they don't control the game, then it can be a shitty experience. About shitty experiences, things break. This is a panel we built in, which was 3D printed, and it broke in the middle of a game, and all those numbers of all those letters fell out. And this was a solution by one of the employees, which made it look even shittier. And we built a new system. A room will have a lot of wear and tear. If you put any book in there, it's pretty badly to see, but here you can see text, here it's completely gone by people just touching it. Any kind of cable will break because people will try to twist and turn anything they come along. Sometimes I have no idea why people would catch something from the room and they think I probably have to bend this metal to fix the puzzle. So there's an old radio in the room. I probably have to rip off the back to find something in there. I thought when I 3D printed a inside of one of those lock boxes to make sure they cannot twist it, they managed to get something under it and try to use one of the other keys to open it. This broke the key and the lock. If you use combination locks, people twist it around, put it in, and set a new combination. So I had to come up with something which I 3D printed to make sure they cannot do that anymore. It's pretty hard to reset a room when you don't know the combination. So for that, I actually learned all my employees how to pick one of those number locks. So they could quickly find a new combination, reset it, and reset the room. I'll skip over that. We had some emergency buttons, and one of the players thought, well, we probably have to rip that out of the wall. Then we put in some emergency breaking glass, and we had some people playing the room who thought they need to break the glass. And then the game ended, because we had a whole system, which fail-safe would be, if somebody does that or the power fall out, everything, the game stops. And they were really upset about not being able to finish the game. It's pretty clear it's an emergency door release. We even explained that in the beginning. People also write on stuff. This actually, luckily enough, was erasable marker. Never put a normal marker in your room, because people write on the floors. You're resetting a room, it's like, okay, there's a solution on this floor. And how do I get this off? And this is what makes it really hard to keep enjoying building an escape room. I'm going to show some more numbers. While I submitted this talk, I actually said at this moment there were 500 escape rooms, and I loosely estimated, well, there might be over 600 at this moment. Most of these statistics come from one of the escape room collection sites, which actually shows every day how many escape rooms there are. This is now. It didn't reach the 600, but the line is still going on. At this moment, there are 536 rooms in the Netherlands on 274 locations. I like to play an escape room, but I only play it every now and then. Why? Because it's really expensive. And even though I enjoy it, it's not something you do every week. So there's no way this market can keep up. New rooms pop up every couple of weeks. And I don't think will be players enough. Especially if I look at the reservations of other escape rooms, they basically are only blocked on Saturday and Friday evening. The rest of the week, completely empty. Which brings me to my idea of the future. I think in the next year, we'll probably see this. There's no way to keep up with the amount of escape rooms in the Netherlands. That market needs to collapse. Then again, this is what I already expected around here. But for now, it still keeps going on. What I do see in the future is virtual escape rooms. So instead of having a physical escape room, you're just going to do some VR stuff. You have an empty room with some small stuff in there. And what you can do with a virtual room, this room is 4x4, 5x5, And there's some technology I'm currently working on. And that technology enables us to turn a room of 4x4 in an area like this. So this is the room you're playing with. You're physically stuck in that room. But with the VR glasses, you can see miles and miles around you. And all of a sudden, you're in a huge area. You just have to find a way the people stay in that room. And that's why we have these walls in here. So they can walk up there instead of directly into the wall. And this way, they can interact with everything around that. These are some more shots. This is a demo we use. We are currently building to show the possibilities of virtual reality in gaming, especially multiplayer gaming. Walking around in the same room, untethered, so with a backpack or with wireless HDMI, we work on different things. And at that moment, enjoying a game together. Another place. I cut a short video about this, which I will try to start. So this is just a shooter we created, but you can see miles in front of you. Or actually, if somebody looks at you in the room, it just sees you looking at the wall. And you interact with stuff far away. This shooter, of course, not an escape room, but we create a platform where you can use that. And we're currently just prototyping. We have no idea yet what we're going to do with it. It's just some next level thing we think is going to be the future for gaming. Done yet? I actually have some stuff with me, which I might set up tonight in the next to the CTF tent to show this demo for people who have never experienced virtual reality to quickly look through it and see what the possibilities are. And it actually brings me to the end of my talk because I rushed over some stuff. And that brings me to the questions.
So yeah, that was a great talk. Thank you. You could hear everybody enjoyed it. So do we have questions? Please line up at the microphone. And I think there will be lots of questions, so keep it short, only one per person.
Okay, so what's the business case? Let's say, what is the price of a session in an escape room? You need to pay for the game masters, then you have the rent of your room and stuff like that. And so how you make a break zero?
So, and that's actually one of the biggest issues with escape rooms. And I see a lot of escape rooms don't have any business plan at all. So that's why I see the market collapse as well. But basically, people pay 25 euros to play the escape room. And you make sure you don't pay the game masters anything at all, just some cheap labor. And that way, people actually manage to make money. So this part of the business case, that's why I partnered up with someone who pays the employees and who pays for the building.
Okay. What about rotten places that are cheaper than city places?
Sorry, again?
Rotten place, let's say abandoned building somewhere nowhere.
So that's why some of the escape rooms are in the middle of nowhere, because it's cheap to be there and they probably run it themselves. Mm-hmm. But in the end, if we have like 300 escape rooms in the Netherlands, over 300 locations, people won't go to those locations anymore. Oh. So it's cheaper to run, but you probably don't get enough people playing it to make it worthwhile.
So 25 euro per person?
Yep.
Okay.
Well, actually, my room is around 20, but yeah.
Okay, so after looking at your talk, I realized that I've been to a lot of shitty escape rooms.
Thank you. So,
it also seems to me that shitty escape rooms are just easier to build, cheaper to build, and cheaper to maintain. So when the market collapses, how do you see that going? Will it be the quality escape rooms that survive, or will it be the shitty ones?
So actually, I'm quite happy you brought it up, because that's some of the things I wanted to explain with this slide. There are still rooms left, in my estimation. And those will probably be the better rooms, because there are so many people who want to play an escape room, and they have to choose which room to play. And they will, in the end, go for the best rooms. Before I now play an escape room, I go online and read the reviews. I never read the reviews of the people who played one escape room. Always read the reviews of people who played at least 5 escape rooms, and then sort it with a bad reviews first. Because then you know, because they had a bad experience, was that because something went wrong that has nothing to do with the room, or is the room just shitty? And that's why you find the best rooms and they will keep running.
Thank you. We
have scheduled an escape room with the family. Where can I find yours?
So the mines are in the in North Holland, quite high up in the middle of nowhere, but they're part of a bigger complex.
Okay.
I will tell you afterwards.
Thank you.
One more question?
So I was wondering, with the sensors, have you experimented with like a failsafe so that like the game master could trigger
a key lock? Actually, you really have to build it in. Even if something goes wrong in the room, the game master should always be able to flip a switch so the game goes on and the people playing the room have no idea what went wrong. Yep. So good point.
Have you played any other VR escape rooms yourself?
Actually, I have played some VR gaming. There's a VR gaming in the Netherlands called VR Arcade. And that's probably what you wanted to hear.
Yes.
Are you from VR Arcade?
No.
Okay.
But I
have to be careful now.
I wanted to go there, so.
Do that. It's a nice experience, but you can see the technology is new. So there are quite some things that really can be better. But it's really cool to have a first virtual reality gaming experience, walking around freely and seeing each other in the virtual world. So yeah, I can recommend that.
We do have time for more if there are any more questions. Yes.
Not really a real question, but we just built an escape room 4 hours ago in the prison bus. Would you like to have a look?
For sure.
And if anybody wants to play, possibly we can take 2 or 3 players at 10 p.m. today, after the next talk, which I want to see.
Okay, 10 p.m. How many people can I bring?
It's currently for 1 or 2 persons, because it's in the prison bus, there's not much space.
Okay, I will be there.
But it's only like a 10 to 15 minute thing, just for fun.
Thanks.
So I had one question. I noticed you didn't mention anything about zoning in the Netherlands.
About
zoning.
The locations where they are?
Yeah, and permissions and stuff like that. Did you leave that out on purpose because it's hell, or?
What do you mean with permissions?
Vergunningen.
There's basically nothing that stops you to build an escape room somewhere. And even with safety, you would expect safety rules. There's not a lot of controlling that. So even there are a lot of rooms which actually lock you up physically, while the employee is sitting somewhere else in the building, and that's the kind of stuff you don't want. Those rooms you don't want to play. You want to make sure that if something happens, you can actually get outside. But there is not a lot of control of where people are building escape room. People, they pop up everywhere, and probably a couple of them will have to close because of that.
Okay.
I built some rooms in Munich, and I just can say, make things unbreakable. that's the basic rule, and hide it well.
Yeah, and that's the biggest issue with escape rooms. People will break everything. I actually had people break a metal bar this big. I have no idea how, but I managed it.
Do you see a lot of collaboration going on between escape rooms?
So, no, not at all. So, especially in the Netherlands, no escape rooms want to work together because they all want to have the share of the market. There's, like we can see, there's a lot of them, and there are all of them are really scared about competition. And there's a lot of competition, so no. Every now and then I visit an escape room and the guys are really nice, and then I tell them I build escape rooms. Usually I don't even bother.
Except for your own escape rooms, what do you think are the best escape rooms in the Netherlands?
That's a tricky question. I would say decide for yourself and read the reviews. I've played quite a bit of them, but I haven't played all of them. So I cannot really say which is the best, because I haven't played all 500 of them.
Okay.
But there are some pretty good ones. But
thanks.
There was the last one, I guess.
Yeah, there's more.
No.
There's more.
All right, yeah, you mentioned the reviews. I always look at those as well, but I'm a bit worried that, well, with the amount of competition, that other escape rooms may leave bad reviews.
That happens.
Yeah.
It happens, but at the same time, it happens that those escape rooms give fake reviews for themselves as well. So that's why you have to rule out all the reviews from a person who only leaves one review.
Hmm. So or one great review and a lot of very bad reviews.
Yeah, and then that's why you need to read multiple reviews. Oh. So one bad review doesn't mean a room is bad.
No, but you don't know a specific review site, yeah, because there are several which you
well,
know.
This one where I took a lot of these numbers from, all escape rooms, it's a pretty good one.
Oh.
And they actually control if people are leaving bad reviews. If one IP leaves 20 bad reviews in one day, then they probably block it.
Oh, cool. Okay, thanks.
Well.
Still more? Or no? That was not a question.
No.
Anyone else? Or have we answered them all? Yeah.
Even if you have rooms, even if you have any questions after this, I'm not very far away.
Okay. You, for example, if you have an escape room and others also have escape rooms, you could be really evil to put the solution of another escape room you played into your escape room, so you spoil the other escape room.
Well, actually, I've seen quite some escape rooms stealing puzzles of each other. So then you join another escape room, like, I've seen this before, and
okay.
I know exactly how this works. Because you can only come up with that many amount of puzzles and new things. So yeah, people at least steal from each other.
And how much stealing is there? So you make an escape room, you visit maybe five and you get inspired by them, and then you make some stories from them or something like that.
So the only thing I do is when I visit a different escape room, I find I try to analyze what works or what doesn't work. So if I find out a certain kind of puzzle, like a puzzle with water, I will never make a puzzle with water. Because that doesn't work. And that's the kind of things you see in a different escape room. But I will probably never steal a puzzle because it's so much fun to create your own puzzles and see people solving that. And you want to have a unique experience for the people.
Okay.
All right, we could maybe fit in one more question, but we can also finish now, nice and on time. Anything really important? Okay, so then let's have a really big applause again.
Thank you.